That's my off-the-cuff theory on it, okay? But it is a fact. You look at papers, and they do have all caps on them, you know, in that first opening line a lot of times. Yes?
Caps means conspicuously different.
Caps means conspicuously different. Okay. Well, it certainly is.
Even in a court of record,
do the same. Sure, why not? It doesn't affect my rights, you know, because since I'm sitting in judgment, I'm the tribunal. The sovereign of the court's the tribunal, unless the authority is taken away from him by a jury. Yes, sir.
In the Styles Manual of the United States of America, and by professors in all colleges on the English language, the only capital letter that can be used in a name is the first letter.
Well, that certainly is their rules.
That's against their rules. Anything written in capital letters is fiction.
But that's their rules.
Yeah.
And my court.
Rules, yes, but the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure and the Styles Manual for the Federal Government also states the same thing.
My court.
Huh?
I'm the tribunal. How important is what you said to me?
It isn't.
Okay. Thank you. That's the beauty of being in control. You're right. You're right. But, you see, there's an old saying in common law. It's actually a maxim. The maxim, and maxims are legally, you can bring them in for judicial notice, okay? But there is a maxim that says small points of the law are not law. Okay? So they use that slicing and dicing and dividing and mixing and all that in order to trash your case when they want to. All right? And I say, yeah, there's some merit. You know, it's good to be educated in those things. But I believe in substance. And when you get right down to the substance, I pay attention to form because I want to put a good show on.
Right.
But when it comes to substance, it doesn't matter to me if it's caps or lowercase. It doesn't matter if your name or my name's in caps or lowercase. Okay? Yes, sir.
Another thing is the caps denote a vessel name, where
right.
Right. Okay. That's why it's important to provide it somewhere in your paperwork.
Well, it does. It's not important if you're the judge.
Right.
If you're the tribunal, it's not important. But at least I don't think it would be to you. It's certainly not important to me. And remember this also, that one of my favorite attorneys is Abraham Lincoln. Of course, he wasn't famous for that. But what makes him my favorite attorney is that he taught me a very important point through his writings. He basically wrote that if you don't want to argue a point, don't bring it up. Okay? So, there are these issues, but you just be amazed. The other side is not competent either. Not only am I not competent, neither are they. So, you know, we don't bring it up, they don't either. So I don't assume anything on their part. The only thing that counts with me is what's on the table. They don't want to bring it out into the open. Doesn't mean anything. Yes, sir.
Okay, one more thing about styling. It might be up and down by the center versus to the right or to the left.
Well, who's the tribunal? Who's going to judge this?
Oh, that's true.
Okay, it doesn't matter if it's left side, right side style, you know. Got to remember, this is a key thing. Let me tell you something now. All of you are going to have this problem. I had it for 5 years. It took me 5 years to grow out of this. Maybe we can accelerate your growing out of it by bringing it to your attention. But everybody's going to have this very same problem that I have, and you just demonstrated that problem. And that is that we keep thinking that the rules are rules for us. They're not. You are cut loose. You're free. When you're a sovereign, you decree the law. You decree what the rules are. Your only problem is that you want to put on a good show so that the rest of the world thinks you put on a good show and that you're right. That's the primary number one criteria. Okay? Number one. So, if caps are important to them, sure, I'll put it in. Okay? Then I'm the guy who's the tribunal. They don't know that. They think the judge is the tribunal. See? And I let them go on with that fiction. I'm very light on that. When I file my case, okay? In fact, the only thing I ever put in my cases relating to sovereignty, personally, is I will say, right in the very first paragraph of my lawsuit, I say, I am so-and-so, you know, my name is so-and-so, I'm one of the people of the United States, or one of the people of California, either way, in this court of record complain of such and such, and that's all it takes. That one little set of phrases establishes my sovereignty, establishes the common law, and strips the judge of his authority. That's in the example.
It's short and sweet. I like that.
It's short and sweet and easy, right.
And a footer, though, too, don't you?
A footer? Well, footnote. You mean down here?
Yeah, the footer.
Well, that's just a notice of application. It doesn't matter as long as it's down there. Look, if you look in the rules of court, they probably specify they want it in the center, they want it on the left, they want the page number here. Sure, those are details. And yes, do put them there, but they're not critical about that. They're not going to... I've never seen a paper refused because it was on the middle instead of the left side.
Yeah.
You know, that's petty.
Yeah.
Huh?
Or do you have to...
This will be on the CD I send to you.
Okay, so legal paper's on there, and then you can just type it in for your computer?
Yeah, you can you know, save it,
like
copy
that.
It's in Microsoft Word format.
Okay.
Right. It's that, yeah.
In that third sentence you mentioned there, you mentioned the court of record. I am so-and-so, I am one of the people in California or the United States. The third one you said about the court of record, how does that sentence go?
And in this court of record, complain of
okay.
Whatever. I'll tell you what.
But
you're
going to
have it.
Do you explain to the judge what that means, or do you immediately
acknowledge it? Neither. I don't explain it to him, and he does not acknowledge it. What happens is that at some point you end up in a hearing, right? And then the judge tries to make a decision. All right. And when the judge tries to make a decision, I simply object. By the way, all of my court hearings never last more than 5 minutes. Okay? I don't waste time talking to the judge. I go to the court. Here's a typical scenario. First meeting that I have, first hearing, whatever it is, what happens is the judge is in charge. He acts it. He knows it. Okay? He's never known anything else. He never met me before or anyone like me. So then he throws his weight around. He wants this, that, or the other. At some point, I object, right? Because I know I'm in charge, not him. And he's not doing what the sovereign wishes. So I just tell him I object. And he says, well, why do you object? Right? Isn't that the normal sequence?
Yeah.
He says, why do you object? And I say, well, it's not my wish. Now, understand, under ancient custom, my wish is my servant's command. Okay? That's a legal principle. That's not just fancy talk. All right? So I just say it's not my wish. So then the judge says to me, well, if that's the best you can do, you're overruled. And I say, well, for the record, that's my wish. And he says, all right, noted, and moves on. And we move on without further discussion. See, I don't care what he does. That's how it goes. All right? Now, when the court session is over, oh, well, one other thing. He might ask me some question, whatever it is. Understand this. When you have a hearing, all of your arguments, all of your law, all of anything you have to say is already in the paperwork. Okay, there's really no need for a hearing. When you go to a hearing, you are not going there to add anything new. You had your chance to say what you're going to say, and it's all on paper. Okay? All your arguments, everything. So why are you going to a hearing? You're going to a hearing only for one reason alone, and don't ever forget this. It's just one reason that you're going to the hearing. And that's to give the court to ask you a question if it's confused about some point. That's it. You have no right to speak. As a matter of fact, sometimes people show up to hearings and all they get is the ruling. They don't even get a chance to talk. Okay? Because they already talked on paper. Right? So make sure you put everything in the paper, because going to a hearing does nothing beyond what you did on paper. Okay? Yes, sir.
If you don't show up for that hearing, will they move to dismiss for lack of prosecution, failure to litigate, whatever.
That can become an excuse if they were predisposed to ruling against you anyway. Okay, but theoretically, you shouldn't have to show up.
Okay?
If you don't show up, then theoretically, they would move on the paperwork, because that's where your real arguments are.
Well, that's fine, because that's what happened. The judge made a tentative ruling before the hearing even started.
Sure. Sure. Okay, your turn.
How would this work in small claims court and or mediation and or arbitration?
Well, first of all, small claims court isn't a real court. I mean, if you watch how they operate, that's the bottom of the barrel for anything. Okay, as far as mediation goes and that stuff, I mean, that's not formal court. I mean, that's an attempt to save money to avoid the expensive formal process. So, you know, I mean, if you're going to agree to alternative methods, that's great. You know,
I'm going there as a court record. You don't say, I am Ken Kellogg. I'm one of the people in the United States. You don't start doing that. So you're on a brief or anything.
Well, you don't. Yeah, on a brief you would, but you know, the thing is that I would object to these alternative solutions. Okay, just that if I know they have mandatory procedures in the Roman civil law courts, where they say, you know, you have to go through a certain amount of arbitration. In a way, it's good, because sometimes you can hash out things informally, because that's what it is. They're just trying to cut the costs and get a little more efficiency on this. But, hey, you know, it isn't always satisfactory.
So don't even attempt to do that type of thing in those cases.
I wouldn't. Well, unless you think you could win. You know, if you think you win, go for it. But I would always go into it with reservations. I would not accept a mandatory settlement unless it was in my favor. You know, all it is you're contracting. You have a right to a court, but you're contracting for an alternative method. They cannot force you into it.
No.
They can force you to go through the motions, but they cannot force you to go into it.
No.
Okay? And actually, you get real technical, you can issue an order suspending their order, ordering you into the alternative methods. But this is a strategy question, okay? What do you think will work to your advantage? If you think it's to your disadvantage and you want the full dress court, as they say, with everything according to Hoyle, then by gollies, do it, you know? You can force it, because you're the boss. Okay, you had a question back here? Or you have one?
What are the rules and what requirements are there to move the court proceedings from one venue to another?
I don't know.
How do you find that out?
Well, you look in the rules of court. Probably the Code of Civil Procedure has it, if you're talking about California. Yeah, you know, there are rules for changing venue. And as a matter of fact, why don't you just go to, remember earlier I suggested Matthew Bender? Or did you come in late? Okay, well, I mentioned Matthew Bender because Matthew Bender, the publications, there's two of them. There's one that's called Forms of Pleading and Practice, of which I have a sample on here. And the other one is called Points and Authorities. And these, if you look up change of venue, you'll probably find all the requirements there. Also, in the public law library, they have a set of books called Action Guides. And these are really super neat. The Action Guides, they're little books. They're typically a little less than a quarter inch thick. And they just go boom, 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 down the line, just the steps you go through on something. You want to do a change of venue? Look up one of the Action Guides and change of venue. And it's really nice. So that's what you should do. No matter what you know, the key to success is research. So be sure to go to the library, and my primary research is Matthew Bender's Forms of Pleading and Practice. My secondary research is such things as the Action Guides, or sometimes, like at Orange County Library, if you deposit $100 with Orange County Library, you then are entitled to borrow up to 5 books from the library. And it's great. And you can borrow 5 items, not books, but 5 items. And I frequently borrow their videotapes, because what they do, they'll have seminars for attorneys. And they'll cover a specific subject, and they're on videotape, and it's like you attended the seminar, and you find out some neat stuff. new techniques that you wouldn't think of. Tell you one of the things that I thought was pretty cute was there was a case in Georgia. An accident had occurred, and there was a whole lineup of cars. And I don't know, 15, 20 cars, something like that. And they're all lined up there. And over this hill at 70 miles an hour or something came this semi. And he just plowed through all those cars. Okay? And he kept going. And right behind them was another semi, same company. And now that the path was cleared, he went right on through. Okay, so here these two semis went on through. Well, there was quite a large lawsuit for the little girl who was in the last car, and she got killed. And so they got out of that the largest jury award in the history of Georgia. It was something like $5 million at that time. Well, during discovery, the defense wanted to see the evidence because, see, you're entitled to see all the evidence that's going to be presented. You're not entitled to see how the evidence gets interpreted. That's your private strategy until you make your presentation in court. But you are entitled to see the evidence. So they asked to see the evidence. And they had video evidence, okay? So they had a composite where they stuck all these different videos together into one long stream, and they said, this video contains the evidence we're going to present. And so they did, okay? And the enemy got a chance to look at it. Now, remember, there's a difference between law and strategy, okay? Boy, did these guys, the plaintiffs, exercise strategy. Because when it came time to present their case, they took the evidence that they said they had, that the other side saw they had, but they rearranged the sequence. And the last frame, the last little clip on the film that they showed, you get tears sometimes when I think of this cute little girl saying, bye, 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 bye. Oh my goodness. That the defense screamed the high heaven on it. But it was on the sample, but it was in the middle. Not the end. When they presented it, it was bye bye, this cute little girl. Bye bye. Talk about strategy. So, strategy is important, and you can do it too. All right. Anyway, I'm going to this. this is back to the main menu, okay? Mm-hmm. And I'll go to the example. We have an example. It's on the website also. And we'll go to the first amended action because that's done correctly. The original action was not done correctly. So here's the first amended action. And normally, it would have been the first paragraph, but because it was an amended action, we made it the second paragraph. But here's what it says. William Jones, hereafter plaintiff, is one of the people of California, and in this court of record, complains of... And there you are. That's all it takes to get your sovereignty. You're setting the forum. The judge is suspended. Common law. All that's done with that simple little sentence. After that, we just did normal stuff. Back to this. Notice of motion. That is the notice. Does everybody understand the notice? Yeah. Now, some mechanical things that I want you to notice. You'll notice that there's no highlighting. It's just ordinary type. Some capitalizations were appropriate. The lines are numbered 1 through 28 on the left-hand side. You have a 1-inch margin all around, not including the footnote or the footnote there, the notice of application. And not including the numbers on the left-hand side. You want 1 inch all around. Preferably, you want 12-point type, space 12 points for each line. Okay, you want it double-spaced. That's very typical. And that's in the rules somewhere. 28 lines. It could be 27 lines, depending on how your typewriter works. Could be
the font?
Preferred font is either Courier or Times New Roman. And I think you have another choice also. It's specified in the rules.
Size.
12-point, or I think 10-point is allowed now, isn't it? I'm not sure. But 12-point, you can't go wrong with typewriter type, okay? Well, that's excessive. Well, the state does anything it wants, but are you talking about your papers when you file it? Follow those rules. They're harmless. They don't affect it, and it makes everybody happy. Okay? So that is the format that you should have. Because this was a countersuit was involved, the caption took a lot more space. Normally you'd have more space to write on the bottom. But that's what you do. Okay?
So you can just substitute your own text.
Sure.
Double space and 12-point and arrow.
Sure.
It is. So they are out there somewhere.
You have that in Microsoft Word also.
Okay.
This.
Perfect.
See, you have Microsoft Word here, and WordPerfect has it. So we go to New, okay? This brings up the menu. Pleadings, okay? There's your pleading wizard, and it puts stuff together. I never use it, partly because of ignorance, partly because it's so easy. What I do is I just set the margins, type what I'm going to type, and then after I've printed it all through, I make a second run through, and I just print the numbers. In effect, I have post-numbered paper instead of pre-numbered paper.
Mm-hmm.
But it works. Okay? So that is a notice. You give notice to the opposition. Moving to the next paper. So after the notice of motion, you now have the actual motion. And again, now in a motion, remember, a lot of people really get wordy on these motions. All right? Look, all you're doing is you're saying to the court in the motion what it is that you want from the court. That's it. You're not justifying it. You're not supporting it with anything. You're simply saying, this is what I want from you. Okay? So, same format. Got your address in the upper left-hand corner. By the way, on my later papers now, I never put a phone number and I never put a job title. I'm not in propria persona. I'm not sui juris, none of that stuff. I simply put my name. Why? Because that is the contact. I might put I might put plaintiff, because that's what I am. Self-in-law? As self-in-law. Well, you could do that. But see, remember, titles do not count. All that counts is what's in the body. So if you want to put that stuff, great. But I just decided, well, you know, put plaintiff up there if you want to put something. But I avoid all misinterpretations.
Why did you come to that?
I thought that there was a lot of confusion around and the meanings of different things. And besides, I like Abraham Lincoln. If you don't want to cover a point, don't bring it up. Okay? Let them bring it up. If you don't like it, you can argue. A lot of times they forget, which is just great. So you have the same idea. Here's the line 8. Remember this. This is true throughout the United States. Line 8 is the court name. Line number 8.
Uh-huh. Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Right. Line number 8. Always the court name. It doesn't matter where anything else is, but make sure line 8 is the court name. Okay, so now here we are. This is the motion. Short and sweet. William R. Thornton hereby applies for an ex parte order substituting himself for William C. Thornton as plaintiff in the above entitled court. This application is based on the declaration of William R. Thornton attached hereto and on the attached memorandum of points and authorities. Respectfully submitted. That's all a motion is. See, when you're going to a court, you're only going to a court for one reason and one reason alone. You want them to produce an order in your favor, whatever it is you want. You could say, I move that the court exclude all people wearing pink shoes. That would be your motion. Now, you might not get it awarded. You know, the judges will resist that, probably. I think it's a reasonable thing to ask for, but they don't, for some reason. So, but that's it. That's all there is to a motion. You just say, in very distinct, clear things, what decision do you want from them? Any questions on that? Yes, sir.
I've heard things like never use compound sentences, keep everything as short, simple, and direct as possible.
Well, that's true. You're writing for people who are not always good readers. So yeah, you should avoid compound sentences, I guess. But in a way, who's in charge? Whose court is this? Boy, does that clear up a lot of problems, doesn't it? That's what I like about being sovereign. You know? It's my court. As long as you're the defendant, though, it doesn't work. Yes, ma'am?
My question is, how is it that attorneys can be exempt from, let's say, being questioned about collusion or their intent?
Because they're not witnesses to the court. You know, if the thing you bring into the court is things that are relevant to the case. If you can show a nexus of some kind, well, sure, they can be questioned.
You can, for instance, show a nexus where the attorney and the client, and you have a witness,
yeah,
are actually planning and plotting, so to speak, to get
your attorney is
no, not my attorney. Let's say I'm the defendant, and we have the plaintiff who decides to go into my pockets and finds a way to do it.
Yeah.
And he's got this attorney who is expert at knowing how to do exactly what he wants.
Sure.
And they actually happen to be boyfriends. And he happens to also be an attorney. And
very common situation.
Kind of, yeah, exactly. So they happen to be at the place. I happen to have a witness that heard all of this going on.
Sure.
How can you bring something like that into...
Well, what you do, it comes down to a motion. You go to the court and you move for sanctions.
Oh.
Time out for tape change.
So you actually move for sanction?
Why don't you stop the tape just a second so I can do another nose-blowing session. So to answer your question about this, you have this misbehaving attorney, which you believe is misbehaving. What you do is a motion. That's what we're talking about, motions. You make a motion. And you can ask for anything. You say he's a bad guy, he's unethical, and you want them to extract $100 out of him or $500 or whatever. You know, you name it, okay? But, like I said, you can make a motion for anything, you can ask for anything, but there are certain forms that if you follow these forms, it makes it easier. Why does it make it easier? Because they are familiar with it. That's all. You don't have to use the forms, but they're more familiar with it, and if you follow the format, then it's easier for them to take your side. But in this case, what you really want is sanctions. That's what it's called. You ask for sanctions against the attorney because the attorney is doing something he should not. And you have your witness. That's what you do. So it's a question of sanctions.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So here it is. You see, here is the motion. Just applies for an ex parte order substituting himself. Respectfully submitted. Okay, signed. Petitioner, dated a certain date. By the way, the addresses on these forms and the dates and so forth, don't look to these forms for any consistency there, because although they came from an actual court case, I might have reformatted them in the light of what I know now as opposed to then, so that these are now correct. I'm just showing the form. Don't look at the content. All right? So, but that's basically all a motion is, just that little bit. Okay, so let's go back to the next step. So everybody so far understand what a notice of motion is and what a motion is. Any questions about that? No questions? Okay, we'll go to the next step, affidavits. Now, I hear a lot of people say affidavit. It's not an affidavit. It's an affidavit. Okay? Or a declaration. Do you know what the difference is between an affidavit and a declaration? Well, in California, on a practical level, there is no difference between the two. But the theoretical difference between an affidavit and a declaration is that a declaration is public, an affidavit is private. In an affidavit, you say what you're going to say on paper, and then you file it, and nobody knows it exists except you and maybe the notary if you had it notarized. Okay? But in if you make a declaration, that means you've publicized it, you served it on other people.